10:30 in the morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Alongside my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the program Curtis Pashelka. Curtis is the San Jose Sharks beat writer for the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
No problem. Good morning to you guys. How you been?
Curtis, obviously brought you on to talk about the Sharks off to a good start, an opening night victory in Los Angeles, a convincing victory against the Los Angeles Kings. You know, this San Jose Sharks team, it seems like there's been so much, I don't know if controversy is the right word, but maybe tension bubbling, you know, just beneath the surface and then sometimes last year even bubbling over. New head coach, do you get the feeling that this is sort of a new start, a rebirth to the San Jose Sharks, even though the lineup is fairly similar to years past?
You know, I do think having new coaches in place with Peter DeBoer and two new assistants with Steve Spott and Bob Bugner does help sort of turn the page from last season. Like you said, there were some tense moments last year between the players and management, and I think it was a frustrating season overall. I mean, they played not very well at home. They played pretty good against the better teams in the league, but not so good against the teams that didn't make the playoffs. It was kind of a weird year in that sense. But I do think that they're starting to turn the page from last season. Obviously, a new captain, Joe Pavelski. A couple new faces in the room. Normally, you know, Paul Martin Jones, Joe Ward. I think they've come in, they sort of helped, you know, not change the culture, but just help, you know, the transition as far as from one coach to the next.
Curtis, you mentioned Joe Pavelski being named captain. Do you think that's the right choice for this team? And you obviously had a great debut there versus the Kings.
I do think it was the right choice and probably the only choice if you're thinking about a captain. They do have some other veterans in the room. Joe Thornton was a captain for five seasons before that. Patrick Marleau was a captain for five or six seasons. They're getting not end of the career, but they're getting kind of close as far as, sort of the twilight, if you will. And Pavelski's the right age. He's in the prime of his career still. He has the respect of everybody in the room. Guys look up to him. Guys know that he wasn't necessarily a high round draft choice. He had to kind of fight and scratch to get to where he is right now. So it was the right choice, and I think it was probably the only choice they had.
You know, you watch San Jose play the first game there against Los Angeles, and one thing, you know, I've been critical of Paul Martin in the past, but you know what he can do well is he can skate and he can move the puck, and he seemed to be a nice complement to the top four, rounding out the top four there now, Curtis. You have him and Mark Edward Vlasic and Brent Burns and Justin Braun. Seems to be a real nice top four group and a strength for a team that's had some weakness on the back end for many years.
Right, exactly. I mean, you bring a guy like Martin in and he can play 22 minutes a night, you know, with no problems. And he's been, like you said, a nice compliment to Brent Burns. Obviously, Brent likes to take the puck up the ice, likes to attack in the offensive zone. Paul's a guy who played with Chris Letang for a number of years, and Chris is a similar kind of player, maybe not quite as big, but a similar kind of offensive game. So that was a nice pairing so far. They've been together throughout, they worked together all throughout camp. They played well together on Wednesday night. They'll be together tonight, obviously against Anaheim, and probably for a good length of time. And obviously, and, you know, it does help balance things out for the rest of the blue line. Vlasic and Braun are back together. Mm-hmm. They've been an effective pair in the past, and it does seem like they got two real good pairs. They could eat all the minutes.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Curtis Pashelka, the San Jose Sharks beat writer for the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, you mentioned Joe Thornton, and of course, I mean, we know Joe Thornton after all these years in the NHL. We know what he brings on the ice. Last season, we really saw a public blow-up between him and general manager Doug Wilson. You don't really ever see that kind of acrimony between a star player and a general manager. What's their relationship like entering the 2015-16 season?
Well, they say it's good. They say that the day that came out, obviously when Doug spoke to season ticket holders and mentioned Joe, Joe was talked to the next day a little bit about what Doug had to say, and Joe said what he said. But later that night, I guess they got on the phone with each other. The owner, Hassel Plattner, kind of intervened a little bit, tried to get these guys to get on the same page. And from everything that was written, they talked later that night and kind of patched things up. And when the first day of training camp, we asked Joe and we asked Doug, "Is everything good between you guys?" And they said, "Yeah, we hashed things out. We're back on the same page." I guess you got to take them at your word for right now. So we'll see what happens. But everything looks okay right now.
Curtis, you wrote about Mark-Edward Vlasic yesterday, and he's about to become the franchise leader in games played for a defenseman with 672 games, which is absolutely incredible. Wow. When you look at Mark-Edward Vlasic's body of work winning the gold with Canada at the Olympics, do you still think he's underrated for how good of a defenseman he is?
Well, maybe not amongst players and coaches and GMs in the league. I think they all know what he does for the Sharks, has done for the Sharks on a nightly basis. Maybe just among the general public. I mean, he's certainly never going to get voted into an All-Star game. You know, he's never been to an All-Star game, I don't think so. He's a guy, at least from a public perspective, maybe is a bit underrated, partly because he doesn't put up a whole lot of points each year, and then partly because he does play on the West Coast here. There's a few reasons, and he's just a quiet, kind of unassuming kind of player on the ice. You don't really see him making spectacular hits or spectacular offensive plays. He's just a shutdown defenseman. He's been like that pretty much his whole career. And it's kind of interesting, like he, of that draft class in 2005, only Anze Kopitar has played more NHL games. So,
wow.
Obviously he's been, he's been pretty steady throughout the course of his career.
Yeah, Kurt, I want to ask you about Rafi Torres, of course, and that was interesting that the Sharks played on Wednesday. Didn't really seem to be distracted at all by what had happened with Torres previously with this hit on Jakob Silverberg. But from the organization perspective, and Doug Wilson came out with the public comments stating that he supported the league but didn't think there was malicious intent, has the organization spoken to Rafi at all in terms of, like, he has some offensive skill. He's not a guy who runs around like a Dan Carcillo without skill. Did they ever say to him, "You don't have to play this way to stay on our team"? Has that been something that's been communicated? Because it seems like he goes out of his way and lacks that discipline to play physical, but in reality can still be a contributing player without that.
Right, exactly. I mean, I think they feel that he can be an effective player without being a malicious player. He can, if he has plays on a second or third line, as a winger, he can get 15 to 20 goals a year, be an effective checker, minimize penalties and turnovers, and do all the things that that made him get been in the league for a number of years now. So they kind of thought that he was maybe turned the page a little bit in his career. Mm-hmm. So whether or not that was directly communicated from either the past coaching staff or this coaching staff, I don't know, but it would have stood to reason that he was, at least they thought after his last suspension, knowing that he was kind of a bit of a target on his back, that he was going to try to clean up his game. But he got caught in a tough situation. He was getting the suspension, and with the hit on Silverberg, who thankfully is okay.
Yeah.
But he just made a boneheaded move there and paid the price for it.
Curtis Pashelka is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Curtis is the San Jose Sharks beat writer for the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, the goaltending has been an issue for the Sharks for the last number of years. They had Antti Niemi, he's generally okay during the regular season, and then you'd flame out in the playoffs. Alex Stalock, they went back and forth. Martin Jones comes in this year. He seems like he's the clear-cut number one. They acquired him from the Boston Bruins and via the Los Angeles Kings. You know, what have you seen in Martin Jones so far? I know it's only been one regular season game, but what did you see from him during the playoffs and from training camp and the preseason that makes you think he's a clear-cut, he's the answer to the Sharks' goaltending question?
Well, the first thing I noticed about him after watching, you know, Niemi for the last 3 or 4 years was, you know, just how calm he is in the net and no extra movement, no flailing around. He's a big guy. He basically positions himself well and doesn't try to chase the puck. He's just a very calm and collected guy back there. And whether or not he's the long-term answer, I don't know. He had a very good preseason. Had a couple of shutouts and obviously played well against the Kings on Wednesday night. But it's still a bit of a question mark. He hasn't been a number one goalie in NHL for a full season before. So it is a bit of a, I wouldn't say a gamble by the Sharks, but there is definitely a bit of a leap of faith in the fact that he's going to be able to be the guy who plays 60, 65 games and gets the team back to the playoffs. So a bit of a wait and see, but things look okay for now.
Curtis, I'll be honest. When I saw that you tweeted that Jonas Donskoy had made the San Jose Sharks, I had never heard of him. Is he? And I know he scored a goal against the Kings in the first game, but is he around to stay? And what have you seen out of him early on here for the Sharks?
You know, I think he is around to stay. He's not. The thing with him is that he's got to get used to the NHL ice surface. He played in Finland, obviously, all his life. He played 4 years professionally in the Finnish league. Really, in the last couple of years is when he's really turned on and kind of rededicated himself to the game and started to get noticed by some NHL teams. He was originally drafted by the Panthers in 2010. Went over there and just wasn't ready. I mean, he said flat out, I wasn't ready. I wasn't good enough at that time. So he came back to Finland, played a couple more years, and then 2 years ago is when he really started to play well. And the Sharks signed him in the spring. And as long as he stays consistent, he's 24 years old. He's not a kid anymore. As long as he stays consistent, I think he'll be here for the entire season, and potentially even staying on that top line with Thornton and Pavelski.
Which is a great place to play. Guys like John and Chichu and different players have gone through there, and Devin Setoguchi have made a career, made some money for themselves. Pete DeBoer, Curtis, he comes in. To me, it's the most talented group that he's had to coach, and I know he took the Devils, of course, to the Cup final in 2012. But what does he bring to the table, and how is he different from Todd McClellan?
Well, he's a pretty even-keeled guy for the most part. You talk to him off the ice, and he's very reasoned and very intelligent. And I would not to say that Todd and his coaching staff were bright guys. Obviously, they're very smart too. Mm-hmm. But I would say the biggest difference and the thing he's preached basically since day one in training camp is that they want to be a much better team 5-on-5. They want to pressure the puck in all three zones. They want to have a much better penalty kill than they had last year. Basically, they just don't want to rely so much on the power play to get them goals as they did in the past. Obviously, their number one power play unit has been very good, but maybe last year was a time when they started to rely on it a little too much for offense. So basically, since day one, he's wanted to get this team to be better 5-on-5, better defensively, better on the PK. And so far it's looked pretty good. Obviously a big test tonight in Anaheim again, but I would say that's probably the biggest difference is the way he approaches the game, the way he wants his guys to play.
Curtis, we'll let you go on this last question. The other sort of free agent that the Sharks acquired this offseason was Joel Ward, ex of the Washington Capitals for a lot of years. Getting up there in age, almost 35 years old, but they signed him to a three-year deal. What are the expectations that the Sharks have for Joel Ward going forward this year and then into the near future?
Well, they'd love to have him sit on that second line with Patrick Marleau and Logan Couture. It seems like it's a pretty good fit for now. But you bring in a character guy. I mean, at the end of last season, maybe the culture of the team wasn't the greatest, and so you bring in a guy who's popular amongst his teammates, but also a veteran presence. Maybe said something here and there if need be. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a 3-year deal. He is getting up there. The one thing the Sharks will say is that he hasn't played a ton of NHL games. He only broke into the league maybe 7 or 8 years ago. So it's not like he's been playing in the league for 13 years and has a bunch of miles on his legs. So they look for him to be a leader, sort of be a kind of a gritty guy, get in the blue paint, score goals, ugly goals like that, be good in PK, just do a lot of the grunt work that maybe some guys in the past weren't able to do on this team.
Curtis Pashelka covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. Curtis, appreciate your time this morning. Enjoy tonight's Sharks-Ducks game, and we'll see you in Winnipeg later on this year.
You got it. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Curtis. Head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, we'll preview Jets Rangers and Jets Islanders.
And here comes Truba, scores! Jacob Truba gets his first of the year as the Winnipeg Jets get their second goal from the back end and have a 3-1 lead.
Jacob Truba scoring last season versus the New York Islanders. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
Hey, Richie's before, walking around the studio. He's making me nervous here. Before, Richie, sit down.
Before we talk about the Jets, Rangers, Jets, Islanders, you guys played hockey, pick up hockey last night. Ezzy, did you wear a mouth guard?
Pass.
Pass. It's not over or under. Anyways, I thought that was the answer. Be sure to get your mouth guards at Linden Market Dental Center. Jets, Rangers, Jets, Islanders coming up Monday in Brooklyn at 12 noon, and then Tuesday in Manhattan. Great sports weekend. You could have checked out the Devils and the two Jets games Monday, Tuesday, and of course the Giants at home to the 49ers tomorrow night, Sunday Night Football. So that's a great sports weekend in New York City. Last year the Jets took both games. They were victorious on the road in Long Island and Madison Square Garden last season. They lost both games at home. But so it's not like the Jets, these should be competitive games, and having won the first two of this 4-game road trip, the Jets take another win here, or they take an overtime defeat, you come back 3-1 or 2-1-1, it's a pretty successful road trip.
It is, Drew, and when you're talking about the Islanders and what troubles they pose, well, they're going to come at you with a good amount of speed and skill, and they have depth in terms of their fourth line. That fourth line they have gets a lot of attention, and rightfully so. Works hard, extremely physical. Matt Martin and Cal Clutterbuck annually lead the league in hits. Mm-hmm. Casey Cizikas, I think he is a hard-working fourth-line center, respectable fourth-line center. That fourth line in general may be the best and most consistent in the National Hockey League. But it starts and ends with John Tavares. He scored the first goal at the Barclays Center last night. He's playing right now with Ryan Strome, who's a tremendously talented player. Really sees the ice well, and they have him playing on the right side with Tavares and Anders Lee. Anders Lee's not a great skater, but he goes to the net. He's very good at tipping the puck in front of the net, kind of like Andrew Ladd, and goes to the dirty area. So I like the way that line lines up. The skills complement each other quite well. Okposo, who you've seen for a long time play with Tavares, he's pending a UFA now, and I wonder what will happen with him. But he's lined up with Franz Nielsen and Josh Bailey. So that line's going to give you some good speed. Bailey can shoot it, and Nielsen's a very smart player, and Okposo is certainly strong along the board. So again, they have different. The lines don't load up on certain aspects of their games. Like, they try and balance it out a bit, and then you have Grabowski with Kuhlman and Brock Nelson. So Grabowski and Kuhlman, Nelson adds some more size to that line, and they were able to be some effective two-way play on the third line, and then they have that fourth line. So it's a very good 1-12. This Islander squad is deep, and Jack Capuano has a lot of assets here. So it's not going to be an easy matchup. I think the Jets are going to be defending more than they have in the first two games, and it's going to put the team's structure defensively to test.
Yeah, you know, Richie, you mentioned how deep they are, and the Islanders' forward group is probably one of the deepest in the NHL, and I agree with you. I love that fourth line. And even though the Islanders maybe don't have as good of a D group as the Rangers, it's gotten a lot better over the years. And I think Calvin DeHaan, a year older, mm-hmm. I think he's an underrated defenseman for them. We know how good Travis Hamonic is. Mm-hmm. We talked about that on the NHL This Week show and on the season preview show. If Hamonic is healthy in the playoffs, the Islanders might go farther, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's able to shut down the likes of Ovechkin and Backstrom. So to me, it's even more of a reason why the start is more important for the Winnipeg Jets. I think the starts against the Bruins and the Devils haven't been what they wanted. And a team like the Islanders, you know, playing in the new Barclays Center, well, for them it's new, in Brooklyn, I think you go down a couple goals to this team, it's going to be a lot harder to come back like they did against the Boston Bruins. And Richie mentioned John Tavares. I mean, this guy is going to be a perennial Hart Trophy candidate for them. And we've got a lot of depth. Ryan Strome had a great rookie season last year. And just up and down the lineup, they've got a lot of depth there. And then you're talking about Tuesday night against the Rangers. This team, 2-0. Mm-hmm. You know, we talked to Dave Maloney in the first hour about this Rangers team. Even though they lost Carl Hagelin, well, didn't lose him, but traded Carl Hagelin and lost maybe a little bit of offense with him and Marty St. Louis retiring. The majority of this team, especially the defense, is the same. It's a veteran group. They can hurt you from three scoring lines. They got defensemen that can jump up into the rush like Yandel and McDonough mm-hmm. and Dan Boyle. I mean, these are going to be two tough games for the Jets. Not saying that they can't beat them, but they got to have a full 60-minute effort. I know it's cliche, but I think that, you know, you get the Devils sleeping a little bit like they were in the second period. You can take advantage of that. These teams don't sleep. I mean, these are very well-coached teams. I think Jack Capuano is one of the most underrated coaches in the league. He does a great job there. So I think that the Jets are going to have to be better, certainly, than they were in the first period against the Bruins. They obviously poured it on in the second and third periods. But, you know, again, if you can pick up a couple points here in these two games, come back with 6 out of 8 points, then that's a successful road trip.
You might not catch Jaro Halak either.
That's what I was going to say. Jaro Halak, the Islanders' starting goaltender, didn't play last night. Thomas Greiss got the start. Halak day-to-day with an injury. I believe it's upper body. I'm not 100% sure. God forbid they tell you what the injury is in the first game of the season, of course. So, you know, up in the air as to who the goaltender will be for the Islanders Monday night against the Jets. Islanders are actually in action again tonight against Chicago. Back-to-back games. They played last night in Brooklyn. They traveled to Chicago to play the Blackhawks again today. Yep. So we'll see if who the goaltending situation is for the Islanders heading into Monday.
And even if it is Thomas Greiss, I mean, you know, speaking of the San Jose Sharks with Curtis Peschelka coming on last segment, I mean, Greiss was a good backup for San Jose before, obviously, Stalock was backing up Antti Niemi.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, he was a good goalie, and the Islanders, a good goalie for the Sharks, I should say, and is still a good goalie. So, I mean, even if Greiss is a little bit of a step back from Jaro Halak being the number one goaltender, it's not like I don't think the Jets are going to go in there and absolutely light him up. I mean, the Jets are going to score some goals. The Jets have a good team here. Just saying, I mean, the Islanders are a team that has the puck a lot of the time, so still going to be a tough game.
I think to their advantage, though, I mean, even if it is Halak in that, or it's Greiss, I mean, if it's Greiss, he's not as good as Halak. If it's Halak, he probably isn't, you know, he's not at 100% probably. He's, you know, just getting his feet under him to the start of the year. You know, not a huge advantage, but I think it certainly helps the Jets that they're going to be facing a goaltender who's coming off of a minor ailment, but an ailment nonetheless.
Yeah, no, Drew, it helps. I mean, Thomas Greiss isn't that good, and I don't even think Jaro Halak's that good.
Right.
But, yeah.
I don't agree with that. I mean, if you look...
I don't think both of them are that good.
Well...
I mean, we disagree. I mean, Greiss has popped around teams, you know, like San Jose. If they really thought he was a guy, they probably would have kept him around. Pittsburgh didn't do a great job as the backup last year, and Fleury had a pretty solid season, really, with 10 shutouts last year. And then as you have Halak, who, to me...
He was good last year.
Yeah, he's pretty good. I just don't trust him. I mean, I know he had the upsets with Montreal years ago. I don't trust him in a big spot. I think, again, St. Louis thought he was good enough. They would have kept him around. They haven't found a goalie.
Sure. I mean, Thomas...
He's better than what they had before. I mean, they went for years without anything.
Yeah. Halak is more of a regular season goaltender where his numbers are okay, and then you haven't seen him totally prove it in the playoffs yet.
Well, I mean, he did that one year with getting Montreal to the conference finals. I just don't think he's that good.
That was a lot of years ago at this point in time. Let's come head to break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some of the NHL coaches who might be on the hot seat to start the 2015-16 season. Well, a guy in New York, will Jack Capuano be on that list? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're fired.
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 You're fired. You're fired.
We welcome future President Trump into the program on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Welcome back. 11 a.m. on Saturday, the 10th of October. Jets in action Monday in Brooklyn against the Islanders. And then Tuesday, of course, Madison Square Garden. Fantastic sports weekend here on TSN 1290. We have the Moose coming up a little bit later on this afternoon. We got Blue Bomber Game Day. We have all a full day of NHL action on Monday and Tuesday. And we got baseball and football on Sunday. So fantastic sports weekend here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Rumors Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Some fantastic shows coming to Rumors in the next few weeks and month. And, you know, it's already October, so if you're thinking about Christmas party seasons for the office, Rumors Comedy Club, that's your destination. Check them out, rumorscomedyclub.com, for all the information that you need.
Remember that great steak we had in Brooklyn?
At Peter Luger's.
Oh, that was good.
That was a very good steak. Yes, Peter Luger's is an institution in Brooklyn. We were there, of course, for my bachelor party, but yes, I do highly recommend that. You know, we highly recommend that.
Remember, we were all there, and we were waiting for Richie to come. Richie saunters in afternoon in Soho.
Okay.
Richie was very New York. It was a great steak, though.
It was Los Angeles Kings. Terrible season last year.
Yeah,
we know that. You know, we know that from, you know, the discussions we've had ad nauseum about it, and then they get off to a really a bad start.
Did you watch the game last night?
I didn't. They start with two games at home.
I did.
Both against non-playoff teams and division rivals.
Two different games. I mean, San Jose outclassed them. Wasn't close. Yeah. I didn't see last night's game, but I watched most of Wednesday's game.
Yeah.
I did watch the game after the Jets game, and I'll tell you, they look completely out of sync.
They played against the Arizona Coyotes at home last night,
yep,
and they lost 4-1. I mean, the Arizona Coyotes are battling. They're if not the worst team in the league, then they're a bottom three team in the NHL this year.
Drew, I can only imagine what Daryl Sutter was saying in that dressing room between the intermission when they went down 4-0.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, I picked the Kings to make the playoffs here, so it's only two games, and I think the Kings will be better than they were last year. But as we know, guys, the Western Conference features a bunch of teams that missed the playoffs last year, like the Sharks, like the Avalanche, like the Stars. All these teams want to get back into the playoffs. So it's not like the Kings are the only team that's fighting tooth and nail to get back into the playoffs. But you watched them yesterday, Drew, and I mean, this team has not looked good early on.
This is a Los Angeles Kings team that last season locked their own head coach out of the dressing room.
Yeah, I don't read too much into that, though.
I think you can't help but read something into that. They locked the head coach out of the dressing room.
No, I mean, Daryl Sutter got them to the Stanley Cup twice, or not only got them to the Stanley Cup, he's won a Stanley Cup. I mean, Daryl Sutter, I mean, he's a great coach. Yeah, two. That's what I said.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they locked him out. I mean, stuff like this happens, Drew. They weren't happy with him. I wouldn't say that there's tons of discord in the locker room right now. I think that this team is still struggling to get back to that level that they were a couple of years ago. But, I mean, you talk about coaches on the hot seat. To me, if this team loses a couple more games, I mean, is this a situation like Peter Laviolette a few years back with Philadelphia when they lost the first five games of the season, then he was fired?
To me, it's just crazy. Like, Daryl Sutter, I know he can probably wear on people a bit. But, I mean, the guy wins two cups, and the grace period is how long?
A year.
And Richie, I really like Daryl Sutter. I'm just saying, I mean, and I don't think Dean Lombardi is going to fire him early on here, but
I don't think so
the way this team is playing, I mean, there's something not right there. They really haven't looked good here early on.
They look lifeless at home in two straight games. You know, you'd think those are two straight victories to start the year.
Well, I mean, okay, I didn't see last night's game. I know they outshot Arizona. Arizona's a terrible team, but, I mean, the problem was on Wednesday was pace. And that's been a problem for them.
Yep. Sure.
How do they control the speed of the game? So they added Milan Lucic in the offseason. What does he make them? He doesn't make them faster. He makes them bigger and stronger to a team that already was big and strong. Do they address the now? Do they address the defensive issues? Excuse me, Voinov's now gone. Sakara's gone, and then you add Erhoff, who's I don't even love Sakara, but Sakara's better two-way player than Erhoff is, and Voinov is a huge loss for him, especially on the right side. So, and the biggest thing, guys, is Jonathan Quick's letting in a bunch of goals. I mean, he can cover up a lot of mistakes that they make. So pace is going to be a problem. I wouldn't panic about this team yet, and I certainly wouldn't. I know that, you know, Daryl Sutter locked out of the room. I think it was Larry Brooks' report.
Yeah.
Give the guy, when you win two cups, I mean, he's going to get at minimum the season. And to be honest with you, I think Daryl Sutter's situation in L.A. might eventually be just Daryl Sutter walking away rather than them letting him go.
Sure, just having had enough.
Yeah, but I just think it's two games. I think the game, I'm not sure about this. I think Wednesday's game says more about San Jose than it does about L.A., but it did make me think, hey, L.A., you know, the game is moving quicker, and you see Vancouver make changes to get quicker, adding a guy like Brown and Sutter, Vertanen, and then you have McCann, and obviously Horvat's a great skater, so you're getting younger and quicker. Are they doing it a way that maybe the teams are moving away from, and therefore, this is the thing. If you're going to play a big, tough style and take away space, you have to be strong up the middle, right? Keep everything to the outside, and your goalie's got to make the saves. And if Jonathan Quick is not making all the saves, then they're going to be in trouble. So he is the key to me. And I know that's a cliche term, the goalie is the key.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they play, they need Jonathan Quick to be at the top of his game. And if he's going to be letting in some weak goals and they're chasing the game, there's going to be a problem. They don't want to be playing 5-2 games. They're not built for that. They're built to win 3-1.
And by the way, the Kings don't play again until Tuesday against the Canucks, who Richie mentioned. And then they play the Wild on Friday, and then you've got the Avalanche on Sunday. All of these games are at home. The Kings start the season off with 5 home games. So those aren't easy games.
No.
Those are against 3 pretty good Western Conference teams.
Sure.
So
it'll be interesting to see what happens there. They do get the Mike Richards saga resolved. I'm not even sure how this is legal in the collective bargaining agreement, but he is going to Mike Richards. They, you know, obviously run into some legal problems at the Emerson border. They, I guess, remove him from the roster, but he's going to have a salary cap hit there until the year 2031. We're not yet sure about the amount of that salary cap hit per season. He had 5 years and $22 million left on his contract when the incident occurred. Dean Lombardi.
Yeah, interesting comments.
Really interesting comments to Lisa Dillman of the Los Angeles Times. I'll send out a tweet about it. Here's the quote. I mean, without a doubt, the realization of what happened to Mike Richards is the most traumatic episode of my career, Dean Lombardi said in a written summation he provided to Los Angeles Times. At times, I think that I will never recover from it. It is difficult to trust anyone right now, and you begin to question whether you can trust your own judgment. The only thing I can think of that would be worse would be suspecting your wife of cheating on you for 5 years and then finding out, in fact, it was true. Anyone close enough to me knows how much I loved Mike Richards. I believed that when I had acquired him, I had found my own Derek Jeter. But the fact is that he was never close to the player that he was after his best seasons in 2008, 2009, and 2009-10 in Philadelphia. His production dropped 50%, and the certain it factor he had was vaporizing in front of me daily. This is a player that in 2010 was instrumental in Canada's gold medal run, and by 2014, while still in his prime, was not even in the conversation for making the team. I tried everything with Mike, meeting with him constantly, sending him to concussion specialists, traveling in the off-season to visit with him at his summer home, and everything failed, Lombardi wrote. I heard the rumors that Mike might have some off-ice issues, but I refused to believe that they were true despite some obvious signs. The reality is that I was played. My only regret, though, is that I wish Mike had been able to come to me with his problem. And that was the last message I left for him on his cell phone when I learned of the incident and all the history leading up to that to the incident. I mean, you don't hear general managers talk about players in that regard in the NHL. In professional sports, you just don't hear that.
No.
I mean, just dramatic comments from Dean Lombardi to the Los Angeles Times about Mike Richards.
He sounds like he's, well, it's pretty obvious, very disappointed and hurt, I think, would be the one word that I would get from those comments. Some acquired a player, and forget what they gave back, forget the Braden Shen, Wayne Simmons, and all that stuff in their performance in Philadelphia. Forget that. What I hear there is a general manager who is excited to bring in a player that he thought highly of, and then, of course, you know, you bring in Jeff Carter, you kind of bring in his group of players, and he clearly saw Mike Richards not being honest with him and forthright with him, and wanted to believe what he was. And again, this is Dean Lombardi's perspective. Wanted to believe what he was hearing, and we did hear some things in terms of promises made and things like that over the past year and a half. And Dean Lombardi is a pretty emotional guy. You know, from what I heard, he can lose his temper a little bit, but I think that emotion is generally, you know, a good thing for him, is that he cares about his players and he wants them to be better people. And if you read the rest of the article, and Drew just read snippets of it, yeah. Lisa Dillman of the LA Times there, Dean Lombardi talks about needing to address this issue on a larger scale. I mean, he sees this as being a problem. He sees the environment, and we can talk about societal issues with all this stuff.
Sure.
But yeah, he cares and wants to make a difference. And you bring in Brent Myers, who was banned from the league for drug abuse, and we don't know what happened and all that stuff with Richards, but the idea is Dean Lombardi wants to make it an environment for the players that helps them succeed, not only on the ice. That's the thing. What I get from it is not only has to be off the ice, is people. And there are managers who don't care about players like this. So I think it speaks to me about a guy who cares.
Let me finish the quote.
In a kind of an emotionless business, especially when you have a salary cap and you have to make those decisions,
sure,
that take away the emotion. And I like the fact that there's a human element to him.
I believe that what happened to Mike Richards is a tragedy, and I cannot let it go. My short-term goal is to win championships. My long-term goal is to eventually become more involved with groups, studying the changing values that are becoming increasingly evident in sport and their root causes. This is Dean Lombardi. I certainly believe that Mike Richards must be held accountable for his actions. But when a player who at one time symbolized everything that was special about the sport can become caught in such a destructive spiral, then I believe the institution of sport must begin to examine its level of culpability.
And I think there's no denying that this has been a very tough year for the LA Kings. It's been a tough year for Mike Richards. It's been a tough year for the franchise missing the playoffs. But for me, the best part about this story, there is, you know, light at the end of the tunnel. It's that, you know, they've settled their dispute over the termination of Richards' contract, and hopefully Mike Richards is able to move on with his life and possibly get back into pro hockey. It's not going to be with the LA Kings, but, you know, you have to look now at the future. And Richie mentioned Brant Myers. He'll be the player assistance director to work with the players.
Uh-huh.
And if they're having problems off of the ice or they're getting into trouble, he can help them and say, like, get your act together. You're getting paid millions of dollars to play in the NHL. And again, it's unfortunate because I'm a big fan of Mike Richards. I think he's a great hockey player, and I hope that, you know, we see him one day in the NHL again.
And that's the thing about Mike Richards, as you talk about, is, you know, just on ice for a second here, is he is the kind of guy that the way he played said a lot about the game. He wasn't and isn't, and he's going to be playing still, I think, isn't the fastest player, certainly not the fastest player, isn't the biggest player, isn't the most talented player. But when he was at his peak there with Philadelphia, he wanted it. He was tough as could be. He would go to the dirty areas. He's a very smart player. Sees the ice, well, still does, just seems can't make it to the spots he could beforehand. And all those qualities, I mean, led the Flyers, you know, to the Cup final there, and that was when he was at his peak, against that six-game great series against the Chicago Blackhawks. And it's unfortunate to see a guy at his age have taken such a significant fall in his output. And that because it's such an outlier, you have to wonder what happened, and that you're getting a little bit more insight from Dean Lombardi's perspective as to what the issues were.
Yeah, I mean, in this macho era, I mean, we're, you know, sports are still a macho environment.
Yes.
To hear a general manager speak so emotionally about a player is very rare, and we wish, of course, all the best to everybody involved in this situation. I guess it's good that it's now officially behind the Kings and behind Mike Richards going forward, but really something to keep an eye on going forward.
I mean, I gotta say, I give a lot of credit to Dean Lombardi for coming out with this and saying these things. And like this show now. I mean, Mike Commoner does it more of a joking, kind of a hateful way, but the idea that, okay, so he's expressing himself after he's done playing, which we see more and more, mm-hmm. and that's not uncommon. Dean Lombardi, as an active general manager, just cut ties, or apparently is going to be cutting ties on a settlement basis with Mike Richards, to come out and say these things through Lisa Dillman, who's a respected reporter for the LA Times, and whose father was, I think, the head of PR for the National Hockey League.
Sure.
I mean,
Dick Dillman.
Yeah, this is a strong message.
This is taking an issue that's sort of been in the shadows, and we saw it with earlier in the week with Rick Westhead and his article, yep, about drug use in the NHL. It's taking an issue that's been in the shadows and trying to bring some light to it so that players can, you know, if they have issues, it doesn't need to happen. You know, they can go, you know, they can come to the forefront and they can go to their teams and say, I need to deal with my issues right now. Worth watching. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll give our predictions for the trophies, the
right,
end of season awards, as we begin the 2015-16 NHL season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. past 11 in the morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer, to shoes, to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. They've got the huge $1 million hockey stick sale going on right now. You can get all your gear there. And assuming you haven't jumped off the Blue Jays bandwagon after the first two losses, tons of Blue Jays playoff gear available at Royal Sports.
No reason to panic. Yeah. Martin Perez is playing tomorrow and pitching tomorrow night.
That's right.
Probably Derek Holland. Lefties, both totally beatable players.
Yeah, neither of whom are that exciting.
Hold on, Richie. I'm just trying to wrap my head around the fact that there's a $1 million stick at Royal.
No.
What does a $1 million stick look like?
I don't think the one stick itself is worth $1 million. I think all the sticks cumulatively are the $1 million stick sale.
Okay, but so it's not like a stick made of pure gold or whatever.
No, I don't think so. Okay. I mean, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm guessing that's not the actual case. And yes, for the Jays, I think I get them out of Toronto, get them out of the fishbowl. They can play a little bit looser, a little bit freer in Texas, and the ball flies out of that ballpark in Arlington.
I know we don't. I mean, leave the other sports to the other shows, but I will just say one thing.
Yeah.
And then we can move on to the next topic. If you have home field advantage, shouldn't you be able to determine if you want to open the roof or close the roof based on who's pitching, hitting, and all that stuff? And instead, Major League Baseball is making decisions for whether or not you open. That's, but why would you have home field advantage then?
Sure. You know, what happens if the Jays get to the ALCS or they get to the World Series
and they
need to play Dickie at home where the knuckleball doesn't dance as well indoors as it would if he was pitching in an outdoor stadium?
So stupid.
You play 162 games and then your home field advantage is taken away from you immediately.
So dumb. Yeah.
Raise the roof. Richie's in the house. Raise it.
Okay. Awards predictions as we get them on the record for the 15-16 season.
Yep.
Let's start with the Art Ross Trophy for most points.
Most points.
Most points.
Tyler Seguin.
Seguin. Now, Richie, in a pool you were in, you chose Seguin over Crosby? Is that
goals were more in that pool, but yeah, I think Sagan's going to win the Art Ross.
Okay.
I like that pick. By the way, I have my picks written down, just so you know that I'm not...
Okay, good.
You know,
hold on, that's
good prep work. That's your shopping list.
Well, you guys
list,
always give
that's
me a hard...
That's Bob McKenzie's picks in there.
You guys always give me a hard time. I didn't prepare, I didn't do this, I'm eating too many sandwiches.
Yeah, what's the point?
I'm going with Stammer.
Are you guys on that close of a basis?
I realize that he had a little bit of a down year last year, 72 points, something like that. So I think he's going to get back up to 90-plus. His goal totals will be up. So I'll go with Stamkos for the Art Ross.
MVP, Hart Trophy.
Ovechkin.
Richard Ovechkin, really? Yeah.
No explanation, Richie. Just
well, I mean, you know what, guys? I think that team is really. I am obviously winning the cup, and I think it's going to be his year. I think he's going to have a monster season. And I know last year, obviously, 53 goals last year, guys. If he continues to just put that puck on the net, and I know Backstrom's out for a few games because Kuznetsov's a real good player too. I think Ovechkin's going to have a huge year.
Yeah, it's tough to argue with that. I'm going to go with Stamkos for the Hart Trophy. I think Ovechkin, I wouldn't be surprised if he wins the Hart Trophy or is a finalist for the Hart Trophy, as he has been in previous years. Mm-hmm. He's an excellent player. You're talking Ovechkin, Stamkos, the two best goal scorers in the league. So I don't think you can go wrong with either one of those guys.
The Vezina Trophy for best goaltender, as you can't take Stamkos here.
I can't not pick Carey Price. I just can't. His body of work over the last two or three years, 2014 Olympics, Montreal Canadiens, I mean, this is the best goalie, in my opinion, since Marty Brodeur. I mean, is he already a Hall of Famer? Probably. Well, even though he's very young. I mean, he's done it all already, except for winning his Stanley Cup.
I think you could say he should, if his career continues on this projection, he'll be a Hall of Famer. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer yet.
He, I can't not go with Price.
The two best goals, probably him and Lundqvist. I agree with Ezzy. I mean, I'd be trying to be flashy if I picked anybody but Price. You watch Price on Wednesday night against the Toronto Maple Leafs. He is so smooth. Two-on-ones, push-off, side-to-side, in position. I know he was kind of scrambling at one point beside the net, but he's just so in control. His angles are always great. He knows where the puck is going to be. And, I mean, Toronto outplayed the Habs in that game, and we're working him over a bit there, but never lost sight of that. He's just so good. And I have him for the Vezina if he stays healthy.
It was a dark horse just to have somebody a little bit more interesting, because everybody's going to pick Carey Price. I think Bobrovsky will be a finalist.
Well, if you're not seeing goals from the corner like last night, maybe not.
It wasn't good last night, but I do think Bobrovsky's going to have a better year this year now that the Jackets are healthy.
Yes. Norris Trophy, best defenseman in the NHL.
I'm going with Duncan Keith. And, you know, I could pick Eric Karlsson. I could pick PK Subban. I could go with Doughty or Weber. But, I mean, last year in the playoffs, I thought that performance by Duncan Keith was the best performance by a defenseman in the playoffs since Scotty Niedermayer in 2003. So I think he's going to follow that up with the Chicago Blackhawks. He's won one Norris before. I think he wins another Norris this year.
I'm going to say PK Subban. Montreal. See, the thing is, Montreal is that they need his offense because they just don't have enough offense, I don't think. Mm-hmm. The way that their team plays and the speed and ability, they're going to put up points. But a guy like that, I mean, he makes the best long pass in the National Hockey League. And he's got probably the best one-timer in the National Hockey League. And more often than not, this award is determined by points, really. And I have PK Subban.
Calder Trophy, Rookie of the Year. McDavid, Eichel, somebody else, Ehlers, somebody completely off the board.
Yeah, it'd be really nice if Nikolai Ehlers won it.
Max Domi got off to a good start last night.
You know, I know this is not a surprise pick. I got to go with Connor McDavid. I do believe the hype, and I realized he didn't get a point in his first NHL game, but I mean,
he's a bust.
Let's stop overanalyzing.
Change the lines. Oh, my God.
One hockey game. I mean, let's calm down. This guy averaged 2.5 points in the OHL last year. So I think McDavid and Eichel are head-to-head all year, and I think McDavid will end up winning it.
I'm going to take Eichel. Only because Ezzy took McDavid.
Yeah, that's generally what I expected. The Jack Adams.
Although,
trope.
I mean, I didn't. I was working Thursday's game here with Rick, but from the highlights, and that's not necessarily saying a ton, Eichel looked to have a terrific game.
Yeah. Jack Adams Trophy, Coach of the Year.
I like that new goal song that they have in Buffalo.
I do think that, by the way, I agree with you. That goal song is really...
What's the goal song? I read about it. I didn't even heard it.
I don't know who the artist is. Maybe we'll get Rory to get it for one of the last segments here. It was a hip-hop song. I should know this. I'm a big hip-hop guy. But Coach of the Year, Drew, I'll go Todd Richards in Columbus.
Okay.
I really like Todd Richards. I really like this Blue Jackets team. I think they're going to surprise someone in the playoffs this year. I really liked him in Minnesota, too. Mike Yeo's a good coach, too, but I liked when Richards was in Minnesota, Rich. So I'm going to go Todd Richards. I think, you know, he's a guy who, it's a big year for him, too, going forward. But, I like what Kekalainen and Davidson have done there, and I like him as a coach, so I'll take him.
The Sabres goal song is DJ Kool's classic, Let Me Clear My Throat.
That's what it is, yeah.
Maybe we can play it into the next break. Coming back from the next break, so I haven't
Let Me Clear My Throat.
Yeah, you're not familiar with that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's not in my playlist.
Yeah. As you said, who did you
Rory
say?
Rory will get it queued up here.
I wasn't listening to you, Ezzy. Who did you say there?
I took Todd Richards for my coach of the year.
I have Lindy Ruff.
Lindsey Ruff.
Like it, Richie.
As, you know, interesting first, again, it's only first game. You can't read into it too much, but that was interesting that Dallas shuts out Pittsburgh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a good
and
game,
And they started
too.
NAMI.
Yeah.
Interesting,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. General manager of the year, last one.
This is such a tough award.
Yeah.
Because in reality, the general manager's job is over the course of time.
Yeah.
Like, so when do you do a good job versus not a good job?
Sure.
I'm not sure. It's tough for me, and I was thinking about this, Drew. You sent out the show plan. Who's it going to be now? I picked San Jose to not make the playoffs. But I said to you after I watched one game, and I thought, ooh, you know, I think this team is like, they if they play that well, they're going to make the playoffs, which I was talking about earlier.
It's one game,
hold
one
on.
Game, and Richie
hold
wants
on.
To give the Stanley Cup out.
Martin Jones,
yeah.
Paul Martin,
yeah.
Joel Ward,
yeah.
Those are all three key pieces. So I'm going to say Doug Wilson, even though I have not making the playoffs. So I'm going to be inconsistent in that respect.
I think you're regretting that you picked them to not make the playoffs.
I am after one game.
Okay.
Well, and it's also
shows
you that everything is based on what a guy does in the offseason, but it's really about what they've done all throughout the year.
But that's what I'm saying for him, because it has to be moves that have been made, right? Like the Islanders didn't make any moves.
Yeah,
so you can't pick Garth Snow.
Well, I am taking Garth Snow. But the reason I'm taking Garth Snow is
for the past few years.
For the past few years and the contracts that
he
signed.
The award's a problem.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, the big moves that he made were last year. Nick Leddy, Johnny Boychuk, Mikhail Grabowski, Kuhlman, all these guys.
And all the great contracts he signed over the years.
For me, it's more so what he's done leading up until this year. I think he's one of the most underrated GMs in the league.
And so much about that award also happens if you retool your team, you know, into the trade deadline.
And I think he will make some moves before the trade deadline, and then that'll only, you know, boost it up. But, I mean, I don't really like the GM of the year, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I don't. To me, it's more about the major awards.
Well, it's a good thing you picked an Islanders general manager. As we hit the break, when we come back, Arthur Staple is going to join us from Newsday to talk about the Islanders ahead of the Jets-Islanders on Monday afternoon in Brooklyn. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
He took it away momentarily, got it out in front. There's a chance of a shot. It's good! Yikel! Jack Eichel, and Buffalo is on the board on the power play, and the number one draft choice in Buffalo is making history in the team's first game with him wearing number 15.
Facebook.com/IllegalCurve and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news.
You on there, Drew? I actually like the music better, Drew.
There we go. I think my mic may have gone out there. Let's go to the Hockey Show Hotline. We'll bring in Arthur Staple.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Arthur Staple, beat writer for Newsday newspaper. He covers the New York Islanders. Arthur, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure, guys. How's everyone doing?
We're doing well. How about you? Early morning flight to get to Chicago for tonight's rematch?
Yeah, I'm already out here and trying to get my mid-afternoon rest in, since I didn't get any rest last night after a big debut in Brooklyn. But the season is upon us, so this is just the first of many of these occurrences, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely, Arthur. Well, we'll talk about the debut in Brooklyn last night. You know, how was it from your perspective? Obviously, the first game at the Barclays Center. They're moving, you know, closer to Manhattan from their
former home for so many years and decades on Long Island. What did you think of the debut of the Brooklyn Islanders, even though they're still the New York Islanders?
Well, the team on the ice didn't look too different. You know, obviously, it's going to take some getting used to for the fans and for the team. Being in a new facility, new routines, most of the guys still living on Long Island, taking the commuter trains into the city for the in the morning. So, you know, I think if you live on Long Island and you're heading into work and you see a guy with a Blue Jays baseball cap on who looks a little like John Tavares, don't be fooled. It's probably him. And, you know, it's probably a different sort of experience for them than, you know, Long Island and the Coliseum is very car-centric sort of experience. There's no public transportation out there. So I think, you know, for the players, it's a little bit of fun to, you know, feel like real Long Islanders commuting into the city for work. And I think for the fans, it just takes a little bit of getting used to. There were you know, plenty of ups and downs last night as far as the fans were concerned. I think the sight lines are a little bit, obviously, very different in Barclays Center than they were in the Coliseum, and the noise level is a little different. The building's just differently constructed, and it takes some getting used to all the quirks that are there that weren't there in the Coliseum. Although that was a building that certainly had plenty of quirks, but the team on the ice, to me, looked the same. They were competitive. They worked hard. The ice itself wasn't so great, but it was a close game right to the end. Tons of shots on both sides. So this is still a very good team, and hopefully that's what the fans can focus on.
Arthur, as you know, Isles GM Garth Snow wasn't a very busy man in the offseason. He had to re-sign Brock Nelson. He brought in Marek Zidlicky. But to you, is this a team that knows what they have and they know how good they are? They know they're going to be in the playoffs, and the next step is getting farther and deeper into the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have the confidence to know that they're a good team. I don't know, feeling like you're already in the playoffs. It's it's obviously a very competitive division. There's probably five teams that are really, any one of the five can be a team that wins the Eastern Conference, and comes out of there. But so obviously, it's going to be very competitive all the way through. And being able to salvage a point last night when there's lots of fanfare around, those are the sort of things that you look back on and say, if they had lost that game in regulation, it might have felt a little bit different. But I think keeping the team together can certainly cut both ways. You can feel like everyone together wants to take the next step, and this is just part of the process of becoming a team that's not just in the playoffs every year, but competes for a title or a conference title every year. And then the other way it cuts is that you don't want that complacency to set in, and you need guys that have been around a long time, guys like Josh Bailey, Kyle Pozo, Franz Nielsen, on up to guys like John Tavares, to keep improving. And obviously that's not a question with Tavares. He scored a huge effort goal last night, but some of those other guys have been around a long time and are just getting used to being on a winning team for the first time. It can be a little tough to push yourself, I think, and those guys all need to have big seasons for this team to keep improving.
You look at the one player, Arthur, on the roster who I assume that the Islanders have high hopes for, and you talk about keeping the consistency. Ryan Strom playing alongside Tavares, playing on the wing. What are the expectations for him this year?
I think the expectations are high. He wouldn't have been put in that position if they didn't feel he could play at a really high level this year. And they've got Anders Lee on the other side, and mm-hmm. those are two of their young guys that they want to be here for a long time. They want to make sure that if they're not always top line guys, they're at least top six guys. And Ryan Strom, last year he came into camp and he's a confident young man, and I think he thought that things would be a little bit easier last season, after having a bit of an up and down year with the year before, going back to Bridgeport a couple of times and not playing a full season in 13-14. And last year, he came to camp and I think he was a little lackadaisical in the beginning part of camp, and it was, he got a little bit of a kick in the pants from the coaching staff, and that was what he needed to have a good year. And I think this year it's more on him to be more of a self-starter, and they've given him this assignment with Tavares. He wasn't particularly good last night, I don't think, but I think the way that he's learned that he needs to play to have success, you expect to see him come back stronger tonight and very strong this season. If he stays there the whole year, that's 70-80 point territory if you can play on John Tavares' wing and show you belong there.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest is Arthur Staple. He's also our friend of Newsday newspaper. He covers the New York Islanders. Arthur, Yaroslav Halak didn't play last night. Thomas Greiss got the start. Halak day-to-day with an injury. What's his status for tonight in Chicago and, say, Monday against the Jets, which is really what our audience is most curious about?
I don't think I don't know for sure. We'll find out later. But I don't think Halak made the trip out here. I think he's still working through whatever it is that's been nagging at him pretty much since training camp began. And I think just the fact that it's lasted this long, he was pretty much off the ice for about 10 days after he played his two periods worth of preseason time. That was the only game time he got in. And I think if you look at it from a skater standpoint, and they missed 2 weeks of training camp, your conditioning level is going to be nowhere near where it needs to be able to play the pace in the NHL. And for goalies, I'm sure it's not quite the same high level, but it's still got to be higher than if you're just you know, slowly easing back in. And he's had some practices this week, but, you know, he's definitely not playing tonight. And I would say it's a long shot to see him on Monday. My guess is Thomas Greiss gets another start tonight. You know, I don't think they want to throw Jean-Francois Berube in for his first NHL start here in the United Center with 21,000 people screaming at him. So, you know, depending on what happens with Greiss tonight, you know, unless there's some sort of miraculous recovery for Halak back home, I think J.F. Berube might make his NHL debut against the Jets on Monday afternoon back in Brooklyn.
Arthur, we were talking about Calvin DeHaan earlier in the show, and I'm a big fan of Calvin DeHaan. I know he's not ever going to get 50 points maybe in a season, but he's a very solid defenseman. And when you look at this group of defensemen, we know what we have in Travis Hamonic and others, Nick Leddy and Johnny Boychuk. These guys have been in the NHL for longer. But for a guy like Calvin DeHaan in his third year, is it a pretty obvious question to ask that the Islanders are expecting more out of him this season?
Absolutely. You know, I think he had a very good year going last season, and then had a kind of freak injury where he took a skate off the inside of his visor in Boston in February and missed about 10 days. And I think he was just a little hesitant after that. Was a healthy scratch a couple times towards the end of the season, which he wasn't happy about. Then he got hurt again in the playoff series against the Caps and missed the last two games. But his play, you know, his confidence seemed to suffer a little bit after the injury. And I think just the way that he was asked to play last year, he was certainly playing more of a you know, defensive style, you know, not really being asked to jump up in the play and be more of a forceful guy on the offensive side. And I think that takes some getting used to for him, having come out of junior and being a pretty offensive-style player. But, you know, they want all their guys to be able to jump up in the play, and his skating is good enough. I think he played a decent game last night alongside Travis Hamonic. So this is the guy who they want to see as a top-four guy for a long time to come. And if he can pull it off and play a good complimentary style to Hamonic, then they'll be very happy, even if the points necessarily aren't there, like you said.
Arthur, are you surprised at all? I mean, I like Calvin DeHaan's game. He's a smart player. Are you surprised at all that, I know the Islanders added Marek Zielicki, but maybe that they didn't add another defenseman with a little bit higher quality than, say, Zielicki?
You know, I think it's an interesting mix that they have. You know, with Thomas Hickey out, Brian Strait's been in the lineup, and Brian Strait's really, you know, a 6'7" defenseman. And, you know, they have Ryan Pulock as a right-handed shot. You know, they have Scott Mayfield, who played the end of the playoff series last year, as a big guy, also a right-handed shot. So I think they feel like one of those two guys should be able to get an opportunity, and they didn't want to impede any of their younger guys. You know, Pulock is here with the team. He didn't play last night. He probably won't play tonight because Zielicki played pretty well, scored a goal. But I think they were looking for, a one-year stopgap guy. It was also a situation like they had with Lubo Gershnovsky last year, where if they have a young guy who needs to get in the lineup and play a little bit, it's not a stretch to see a 38-year-old guy sit as a healthy scratch for a few games. So I think that was the understanding with what they were looking for. And I think they feel pretty good about the top four, with Calvin DeHaan kind of being the fourth guy with those three that you guys mentioned before. And I think they feel very comfortable with Thomas Hickey as kind of anchoring the third pair. And, you know, on the right side, they kind of had that wild card, and they just didn't see anybody out there that they liked. I think Zielicki also helped them with their power play. Mm-hmm. Didn't help much last night, but I think ostensibly he's a guy who can unleash a big shot, and that's what they want to see from Ryan Pulock eventually. And I think they feel like they will, and they want to kind of ease him into it and not be in a situation where they're going to have to depend on a 21 or 22-year-old rookie to anchor their third pair.
I know it's early in the season, of course, Arthur, but there's been a lot made in Winnipeg about the pending UFA status of both Andrew Ladd and Dustin Bufflin. And you look at the Islanders, there's three pretty important players to the squad. And Franz Nielsen, who's kind of that, you know, Swiss Army knife in terms of playing in all different situations for the team. Kyle Okposo, of course, probably the most well-known. And then Matt Martin, who's a staple of the fourth line. Where is the team at, excuse me, with negotiations with these three players?
You know, I don't think there's much, concern rather over Matt Martin. You know, he's a fan favorite. He's a guy who fills a very particular role. I don't think he's going to be asking for the moon in any sort of contract negotiation. So I would imagine that he's going to be here. You know, Franz Nielsen is a more interesting case. He took a pretty team friendly. Mm-hmm. deal last time around, and $2.75 million, I think, per year for 4 years. That one's expiring. He's getting a little, he's kind of getting past 30 years old now, over 500 games. He's such a valuable guy in the room, you know, a guy who's relatively quiet, but when he speaks, everybody listens. They have a lot of respect for him. You know, the guy who plays, you know, top pair penalty kill forward, plays on the power play, takes a lot of important draws. So, you know, my feeling is something will get done there. I'm sure there's discussions going on. Obviously, the big question mark is Kyle Opozo, and it has been since right before the draft when, you know, word mm-hmm. had gotten out that, that he was being shopped in a fairly limited way. There wasn't anything to their liking, I don't think. So it didn't happen then, but I think, you know, Kyle Opozo, a guy who's, you know, you never think is going to be anything but an Islander going forward after having been there for so long. That, you know, I think the contract negotiations, as limited as they were over the summer, were just not what the Islanders were interested in. They've got some young guys coming who can be top six forwards, and I don't think they feel they want to commit to Kyle Opozo for 6 or 7 years at a big number, having him come off the eye surgery last year. He had a major shoulder injury a few years ago. So, you know, there's some decisions to be made. I have a feeling that if he has a good year, he's certainly going to be here the whole year. They're not thinking about trading him. But similar to Matt Molson a few years ago, if the team starts slowly in October and he starts slowly, you know, anything could happen before November rolls around. You know, Garth Snow can be very unpredictable like that. So, you know, Opozo's definitely a guy to watch. He had a pretty good game last night. I think, you know, the tentativeness that he had at the end of the year coming back from the eye surgery is gone, and I think he knows how important this start is to his season and to the Islander season for him to be here.
Arthur, we'll let you go on this last question. The three of us in this room feel that the Islanders are a playoff team. Why is this the year, if they do indeed make the playoffs, why is this the year? Why is this the team that's better suited to get over that first round bugaboo that they, you know, to get into the second round and maybe even deeper in the Eastern Conference playoffs?
You know, I just think the depth of experience, I guess you could call it, is a little bit greater. You know, they surprised everyone back in the shortened season in 2013, getting in, and almost you know, if they'd had some good goaltending, they might have upset the Penguins, which would have been a huge statement to make to kind of arrive on the scene that way. They took a step back the following year after not doing too much in the off season. They make the big moves before last season, and it translates right away, and they're, you know, they were a top team in the Eastern Conference pretty much from day one all the way to the end of the season. And then they, you know, injuries hurt them, and a game seven that, you know, with 11 total shots on goal and just, you know, ineffectiveness up and down the roster was kind of one of those moments again where you say, gee, you know, if they had more guys that had been through a situation like this, maybe the result would have been different. But now I think everybody has that in their memory banks, the guys like Tavares, Hamonic, the emotional leaders of this team, and the on-ice leaders of this team. You know, they've gained that knowledge of, well, here's what we need to do at this time of year, and here's what we need to do when we get into a situation like a game seven and we're short three defensemen. And, you know, I think you learn by and you grow from being in these situations. It's hard. You know, they obviously brought in cup champions like Nick Leddy and Johnny Boychuk, but you can't really tell people what it's like. You have to go through it. And I think they've been through a couple of things. Now, maybe it doesn't translate right into a conference final or a Stanley Cup final this year, but they certainly have all, you know, this group that's been very tight-knit and been through a lot of losing and is now, you know, enjoying the benefits of growing together and being a good team has learned how to win. And, you know, if they can make that translate in their new building and make it work in Brooklyn throughout the regular season, which is going to be a grind, then I think they'll be even more dangerous come playoff time.
Arthur Staple covers the New York Islanders for Newsday newspaper. Arthur, we always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us. Enjoy the 2015-16 season, and we'll see you in Winnipeg a little bit later on this year.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Anytime.
Take care, Arthur. It's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. One final segment on this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. know that you guys have had enough of hearing about me, but I don't think the audience has quite had enough.
Bruce on, I love it.
There you go. Everything's going well. That's one final segment. We know it. You love it. It's called Rapid Fire.
Rapid Fire.
Connor McDavid made his NHL debut in St. Louis on Thursday night, registering no goals, but displaying flashes of brilliance that make him the most talked about phenom since Sidney Crosby. Despite the game being sold out in St. Louis, did the NHL err in not having Connor McDavid make his debut in a more meaningful market, as opposed to a St. Louis market that is more in tune with the MLB playoffs and the St. Louis Cardinals?
Yes, they did, for sure. And the NHL erred in having him on a total of one time nationally in the States this year.
Is that it?
Yeah, against Buffalo.
Well, that's the one game. Yeah,
it's in the NHL, again, classic. They don't market stars. They market markets. So I haven't looked at the schedule, but I'm assuming we're going to have a great mix of Boston-Philly matchups on Saturdays to bad teams because they're big markets and they want to inflate the numbers as opposed to growing the game. In the NBA, you see Oklahoma City against Phoenix.
Kevin Durant.
That's what I mean. They market the stars. They don't market the markets.
Yeah, I think it's fairly obvious to say that you'd like to see Connor McDavid more against big American market teams. So, yeah, I think, you know, you'd like to see him in a more meaningful market. But, again, you know, these decisions are made by the NHL, not us. And, you know, I guess they made a mistake here. But, you know, hopefully going into next season, they'll try to put McDavid in more situations. And again, I think the schedule, you know, it's tough to always make the perfect schedule, right? But it's hard to overlook that the debut of Connor McDavid maybe wasn't as widely viewed as it could have been.
Well, they just, you know, of course, because Gary Bettman's genius, because the league makes so much money and all the commissioners make so much money, their leagues make so much money. I think that's a big problem, and it's been a big issue over the years. Even Crosby and Ovechkin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you had those battles, but have those stars been marketed?
Well, shouldn't PK Subban be the most marketable star in the NHL?
Yeah.
Especially in the United States?
Absolutely.
I mean, African-Canadian, he's a player who would certainly resonate. You know, he looks different than the rest of the NHL, and I mean that in the most complimentary way possible. He should be a guy that you can put into other markets, into the Bostons, into the Philadelphias, everywhere, and say, this is the face of the NHL.
I just don't think that there's... Like, you have your marketing in Canada and you're marketing in the States, and I think Mark Cuban spoke about it years ago that they talk about television numbers as a whole, not as what happened in the States and Canada, because the game is so big in North America. And I think there should be marketing of the stars on a more of a, even a global basis.
Just a few days into the season, there have already been some significant injuries. James Wisniewski tore his ACL in Carolina. He's out for the year. Jakob Markstrom didn't even dress for the Canucks opener. He's injured. Sounds like it's a week-to-week situation. And Robin Lehner left the Sabres opener, and reports have the injury as a long-term situation. They put him on IR today. Does the Lehner injury immediately remove any possibility that the Sabres could have been a surprise playoff team in the Eastern Conference?
Well, I personally didn't have the Buffalo Sabres as a playoff team this year. And obviously they went out and they acquired Robin Lehner from the Ottawa Senators as their you know, big free agent acquisition. Chad Johnson is the backup there. He's not as good as Robin Lehner, Rich. But I didn't have them as a playoff team either. So it's obviously an injury that's going to hurt them early on this season. But hopefully Chad Johnson can man the fort while Leonard's out.
We don't know for sure. It's supposed to be at least 1 week, so we don't know if it's that serious or not. I mean, there's some conflicting reports, Drew. But if he's not there, then they have to be calling Minnesota or Carolina or Calgary with depth and goal. They have the cap space to fill it because Chad Johnson cannot do that. That's why they brought in Leonard in the first place, both for the now and for the future. And they gave up a first-round pick to do so.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I meant to say trade, not free agent acquisition.
Sure. Wednesday night's opener between the Sharks and the Kings had plenty of bad blood as Milan Lucic objected to a hit delivered on him by Logan Couture and received a match penalty for his retaliation. Well, in a separate incident, Dustin Brown exploded into Logan Couture with an open ice hit.
That was an open ice hit, but an open ice headbutt. Should have been suspended for that.
Here's my question.
And he's dirty and he does it intentionally and he gets away with it because he acts like he doesn't.
Okay, so Richard is saying yes to my question of, did you have any problem with the hits that occurred in that game? Is he?
I didn't see the hit, so I can't. I don't really want to comment on it.
Battering ram. He just headbutted him in the middle of the ice. Dustin Brown.
cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stink like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Ezra, cheer or jeer?
Cheer, always a jeer. No surprise here. Marty Brodeur's number is going to be retired in New Jersey. They're going to build a statue outside of the Prudential Center. So that's awesome. That's pretty speaks for itself.
Richard.
I'm going to jeer the National Hockey League. From what we talked about before, Drew, you stole my thunder there.
In terms
of the question. Not another question prepared before. But I just think that Connor McDavid game, you put him up against Chicago on opening night, and you can get the Hawks. I know it's rivalry night by NBC, but you can get the Hawks as the returning Stanley Cup champion against the young guy, the team that's going to look like that team maybe in the future. I thought it was a great storyline, and they threw it away. The Rangers and Hawks, sure, original six, but you could have gone a different way with that.
That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. A big thank you to Dave Maloney, Rangers analyst on Madison Square Garden Television, for joining us. Big thanks to Curtis Pashelka of the San Jose Mercury News. And a big thank you to Arthur Staple of Newsday for joining us. In case you missed any of those interviews or any of the show, that's available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and on IllegalCurve.com. A big thank you to our sponsors, Royal Sports, Keener Jerseys, the Jewish Foundation of Manitoba 40th Annual Luncheon, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, and Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Rory, for Richard Pollock, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for listening. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for Manitoba Moose Hockey and Blue Bomber Game Day later on today on TSN 1290.